Okay. Rabbi Chol, can you turn on the switch on the bottom? Right behind you, there's a switch by the electric outlet. Okay, now it's on. Okay. 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 We're up to almost page. Okay, here we are. We are up to Pasuk Tes. Okay, Pasuk Tes. Yanochi, all the good things that Hashem has done for us and how ungrateful we have been to Hashem. Pasuk page 282. Perek Beis, Pasuk Tes, and Sefer Amos. Hashem says to Klal, this is continuing the discussion of Yashlesha Pishei Yisrael. And Hashem here says, "Yonochi, I've been so good to you. Hishmanati esarim ibnehem. I have destroyed, obliterated the nation of the Moreb ibnehem. Asher ki goy v'arazim gavoy. Who are the Emorim? The Emorim are not just pushovers. These are people who are extremely powerful and mighty, like the might of a cedar tree. The chosaydu ka'aloinim. Chosayn is their strength, their power." Is mighty like the Aloinim. This is the oak tree. So we have two trees so far. We have the cedar tree and the oak tree. The Ashmid Piryoy Mimal, I cut off their fruit from above. The Shoroshav Mitochas, and their roots from below. This is what Hashem has done for us. Wiped out the nation of Emori, arch enemy number one, who is tall like a cedar, is powerful and strong like an oak, and has fruit above and roots below. Four metaphors. Okay, nothing is for granted. Nothing here is insignificant. Four metaphors describing the nation of Emori. Sichon Melech Emori. Sichon is a major player, major topic of discussion in Chazal. Who exactly is Sichon and who is Oig? Oig is Melech HaBashan and Sichon Melech HaEmori. A lot of very interesting things over here. And here we're learning about this nation like never before. Four different metaphors to describe cedar, oak, fruit, and roots. Next, we'll come to some of this in a few moments. V'yonochi, and it's I, Helesi, who have brought up Eschem Yeretz Mitzrayim, V'olech Eschem Damidbar Arboim Shana. I brought you out of Egypt. I took you in the desert 40 years, L'resh Eretz HaEmori, to give you possession of the land of the Emori. And notice it does not say Lahanchil. L'reshes is a different expression. Eretz Emori was not necessarily meant to be part. It's not of the Shivas Ananin. It's not the seven nations. It was not meant to be part of the Yerusha of Eretz Yisrael. It was only became part when Reuven and Gad and Chazir Shevet Menashe. Reuven and Gad, when they demanded that they wanted to stay on the other side of the Yarden and take possession. So then Moshe gave them this land that became part of Eretz Yisrael as well. But it was not originally part of the plan. And that's why it does not say the word of Yerusha. Yerusha means an inheritance. Hashem said to Avram Avinu, it's yours. Once it was Avraham, then automatically when we took possession of the land years later, it was a Yerusha. It was our Nachala. L'reshes has a connotation that it's not yours. It's not yours, but I'm giving you permission to conquer and take possession of this land on your own right. Eretz Yisrael today, there are two parts. There's the part on the west side of the Yarden, which is the primary, the seven Amamim. And then there is the part of Eretz Yisrael on the east side of the Yarden, which was not part of the Zion Amamim, but it's something which we took possession. Part of the land is Birusha, and part is in a conquest. There are two chalakim of Eretz Yisrael, the part that we own, we did Avram Avinu, part that we took because of this Yerusha. We'll see more in a moment. L'resh says Eretz Yisrael. Let's stop with these two psukim right here. Let's just do these two together first. Pasuk Tes in the Mitzvot does it. The pasuk says, "V'nochi yishmanti v'tzorah le'machalei af es avdei kachavim asher lo yedu'uni ani ma'nisham ba'avoinam." The nations which do not know me, okay, the goyim who have no clue. Pagans, they don't know, they were never taught that there is a Ribbono Shel Olam. Hashem says, I punish them due to their sins. Ki Eloi Hishmadati Mipnehem Esamari Shegovay Ki Eres Chosaki Ilan Aloin Vashmid Ritzin Olamar Hishmadati B'Tachlis. A complete obliteration. There is no fruit and there are no roots. Fruit represents their legacy continues ad hayoyim hazeh. Every nation today, every, all the ancient nations, we have something from them. They have taught us something. They have given us something. If you go to the museum, and they'll have a section on Egypt. There'll be a section on the Babylonians. There is something that something unique. There was a culture. There was an ideology which today there are people who benefit from. There are people who this particular ideology, this style, is appealing to them. And there are communities, like everyone knows, in Mexico has its flavor. Different civilizations. And ad hayom hazeh, you have people who find that approach to life in all of its various facets, whether it's in the music, in the food, in the style of living, in their religion, there's something that appeals to different people.
When they are civilized, but they don't believe in Hashem, so you want to obliterate them anyway?
No, that Hashem, we learned many times Hashem would not do that. Every human being has naturally built into them a sense of right and wrong. So if they go, they destroy that natural inborn understanding of Toi Vera, then we learn that different opinions, there are different opinions as to when will Hashem intervene and punish them. So there's no question about it that there is punishment for a violation of moral laws. No question about it. The question though is, like you just said, let's say they don't do anything wrong, but they just don't believe in Hashem. Okay, so that's a very complicated thing. When does Hashem? I don't know the answer. Obviously, it all depends, and every situation is different. Let's see further here in the Mitzvot.
Some we have to do it like cleaning from Shabbat and was keeping from the.
What do you mean?
Laying down.
I mean Pesach.
Yes.
Haseba. Okay, that's.
Or the some people dress.
The way we dress. Okay, you're right.
But one would think that the first priority is that Hashem would be slow to punish those nations that leave us alone.
True, that's definitely true. That is definitely true. Okay, you're right. Okay, this is just a general ideas. Every nation has peiros. Peiros means they leave over something which the world can benefit from. They have formulated a path in life which is appealing to certain people. And that's a benefit. Here it says that Emori, there is absolutely nothing left of the nation of Emori. We don't know what kind of music they enjoyed. We don't know what kind of food they ate. We don't know what kind of entertainment they enjoyed. And religion, what exactly was the nature of their religion? What kind of idols did they worship? There's what to learn. There's what to learn from everything. There's what to benefit. And it says here in the pasuk that Hashem says there's nothing left from them, nothing. There is no peiros. You always hear this expression that you should produce peiros. Produce peiros means that you should leave over something in this world that other people can benefit from. You have a legacy in this world where there's what to take from. The nation of Emori, the pasuk here in Amos makes it clear as day, they have left over absolutely nothing. And roots means... How does he touch the Sharashim? Let's see how go further over here in the Mitzvah David. Ashmed Shalamba Hashmadi Vitachlis Lufishim Shila Ilan Amar Lushan Anifal Hashkosas 8:3. Shemashidim Haperois Vaikrim Hasharashim. Okay, that's really explained over here, but it just basically says over here is like a tree. There are no fruits and the roots have been uprooted. Pasuk Yud in the Mitzudos, Enochi Aleisi, which is Loimal, Yatem, Halo, Yidatem, Oisi, you who know me, Kyanochi Aleisi, Eschem, Besipakti, Tsarchechem, I have provided your needs, Bamidbar, Arbon, Shono, Lovoi, Loresh, Esses, Eretz, Hoimari. Okay, that is the parish of the Mitzudos, very straightforward. Let's see Rashi. Rashi is Koaloinim. Rabbi Chol, can you please fill us in on this French word? Chestnut? All right, Mr. Willis, is the bathroom available? Maybe we should go to the bathroom. We have a microphone there, though. Are you going to hack away the whole day here?
Yeah,
it's always so much noise. What?
They said they would be doing it for a while.
All right, we'll try it. Let's see what happens. You want to go see?
The microphone alive. I can't hear you.
Annoying.
Anyway, there's
some say chestnut. Yeah.
Even call it pine. But the
Rashi
seems to be leaning towards chestnut.
We'll stay here a few more minutes. If it gets so bad, you keep track. You tell me.
I think I only do like 3 or 4
players in a squeeze. Yeah, so it should go quick.
Well, I don't know.
All right, we'll see what happens. Well, we'll stay a few more minutes, because going, it's a whole big schlep to go back there, with the svar and back and forth. Cement, yeah. All right, we'll see. We'll give a few minutes. Okay, so we have here, okay, say chestnut, oak, what else did you say?
Others say the pine.
Pine. Okay, pine, chestnut, oak, whatever it means, is something very, very strong. Next words in Rashi. The Ashmid Piryo Mimal, what's the Piryo? So he says something more mystical. The Sarim Ho'elioinim. Every nation has an angel in heaven that serves as their advocate. So doesn't over here mean, I told you something, hold it in Parish. Parish means a legacy in this world. What today, if you'll go to, it would be nice if you can go to the museum, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and there can be a whole section showing you about the ancient Amorim and showing you their culture. So Rashi says, no, there's no Peros. There's nothing. Nothing from them. That's not what Rashi says. Rashi says the Peros Mimal refers to the ministering angels in heaven that serve as their advocates. Like we learn about this in Yisias Mitzrayim by the Makos. Okay, that's v'sharosha mitochas. Sarim ha-tachtoinim means the officers here in this world.
Isn't it kind of odd for Rashi to go for that?
No, not really. Rashi mixes and matches. That was the chach of Rashi. Rashi's whole derech. Rashi was very novel in his days. We learned this many times. In Rashi's days, there were two schools of learning Chumash. One school would translate Zuntai every single word literally. Literally. A literal translation of the pasuk, of every pasuk, and you get into a lot of trouble in that. And other commentators, everything was an allegory. Everything was a mashal. And you can even add to kedekach that some of the stories, you can even say, they sometimes say didn't necessarily happen, it was just mashalim, it's just a mashal. So these are two very, and each commentator stuck to his approach. No mixing and matching. Rashi was the first, was an innovator. And it's something that's really hard to appreciate. Rashi mixed and matched. Rad le basi elo leforesh. I'm going to give you the best shot in the pasuk. Sometimes I'm going to tell you the pasuk cannot be learned literally. And sometimes the pasuk should be learned literally. And Rashi vacillated throughout his entire parish, sometimes like this, sometimes like this, sometimes he gave both. This was unheard of. This was something which was shook up the world. How can you be inconsistent? How can you be inconsistent in learning in Chumash? You have to follow a certain style. If your style is a literal translation, you gotta go with that all the way from beginning to end. Well, you have to figure out what it means then. Classic example. Lifnei iver, lo sitein mirshol. Do not put a stumbling block before a blind person. So the question, is that, how do we translate, what would happen, halacha lemaisa b'zman hazeh, if you take a stone, there's a blind man walking down the street, you put a stone in front of him, and he walks, and he trips. Are you chayiv malkos for the loisaseh lifnei iver loisite nirshol? You'd be shocked to learn that some mafarshim say you're not. There are rishonim that say you're not chayiv malkos. Oh, but it says in the pasuk, lifnei iver loisite nirshol. It says that's not what it means. It's not to be interpreted literally. It means that a person that is, okay, we have to go through the allegorical understanding of what that means. Do not mislead people. Don't misguide them. This guy wasn't misguided. This guy was going on his path. There was a stone there, and he tripped. You're a grama. A grama ben izakin. You didn't do anything wrong to him. I mean, he stumbled. But that's not what the pasuk. How could you say that? How could you say that lifnei iver lo site nirshol does not mean that do not put a stumbling block in front of a blind person who's going to trip? They say no, it means do not enter into his mind and persuade him to do something that you know is not for his benefit. It doesn't mean actually putting a physical stone, because you have not entered into his mind. Iver means the eyes. The eyes represents a person's approach in life, what he sees, his outlook. Don't falsify or corrupt his outlook on life. It doesn't mean don't put a stone, because that has nothing to do with his outlook on life. That's shocking to say that the pasuk is not going to be interpreted literally. That's an example. How do you translate the psukim? And normally, there's a rule, you have to be consistent. If you learn one pasuk this way, then everything must follow in that same pattern. And Rashi was an innovator. He was able to say, no, this pasuk we're going to learn allegorically, and this pasuk we're going to learn, give a literal translation. And this shook up a lot of people. There's a lot of stories of Hasidic Rebbe, these very holy people, they would present, they would say a Dvar Torah to a holy person, and he would say, if this is how your style, if this is your approach to learning this piece of Gemara, I have a bicycle here.
Not in the front. No.
Okay. If there's a lot of stories where you go to a very holy person and you tell them of art. And they would say, if this is how you're learning pshat in this pasuk, let me predict what you would say for this pasuk. And let me predict what you would say the pshat in this pasuk. Many times someone tells you a vart. And if you're familiar with the styles of the different Gedolei Yisrael, you can right away predict who said this vart.
Right.
I'll tell you a funny story. I once talking to someone, a very chashuv person in a yeshiva in Shul, a Rav, I told him my own vart. He says to me, he liked it, okay? Unusual. Someone liked something I said. He likes. He says, who says this? Who says this? I'm very close with him, so I can joke around with him. So I said, you want to know who says this? I'll give you a choice. You tell me who. Svasemes. Or number two, Chasam Sofer. Number three, Avyosha Ber Soloveitchik. Number four, I told him a whole bunch of different styles. I told him, and I said, maybe I said it. Maybe it's my heart. Maybe if it's a crumb of art, so you don't want to ascribe anything that's nonsense to a goggle. So maybe I said it. And he's stroking his beard, lives like for 2 minutes, and he enjoyed the challenge because he knows he's very familiar with all of the different styles of the different gedolim. And he's stroking his beard, and he says, Rav Yosha Ber Soloveitchik. And I was so happy. I said, if that's what you want, let it be. Let it be.
No, that's how the Gemara works all the time.
But
we assume that somebody, this would be his part, you know, this is what he would hold in this case.
Exactly. There's a story where there was a blind Talmud Chacham the Gemara, and someone gave him to drink. So someone diluted the wine. Just diluted the wine. I mean, it says this wine tastes like the wine of this certain person. that he knew from his youth. And it was. How could he tell? It's just a matter of diluting, eating water and wine. How could you tell? Obviously, once a person has a certain style, and once you're sensitive to that style, you can continue with that style. Rashi, so you're touching upon something very interesting. Rashi, you're suggesting Rashi normally says things that are very rooted, very grounded, very much shot oriented. That's not necessarily so. I mean, I don't know. I don't really know. But Rashi definitely, throughout his parish in Tanakh, and Chumash especially, likes to mix and match Pshat with Agada, and that was unique. This was the novel approach of Rashi, which no one did until his time. Everyone focused on one particular derech. It's either Pshat or it's Agada. They did not mix. Rashi was the first one to mix, and he said, that's what I'm doing here, Eini Basi, Ela Lefarish. What does it mean, Lefarish? Take all of the various pshatim, the midrashim and the simple translation, which one fits best into the translation of the words. If the agadic perush, the mystical, allegoric interpretation, fits best into the words, that's what I'm going to give you in my perush. If the best perush of the pasuk is what the simple translation, a word-for-word translation, that's what I'm going to present for you in my perush. So here Rashi obviously feels that the Piryo Mimal is something very mystical, something that's off the charts, referring to angels in heaven, advocates for these nations. Next, Vishrosh Mitochas, the Sarah Tachtaim, the Racher Hatsira. Okay, now there's another interpretation. What is the Sarosh Mitochas? This is we have in Parashas Yisroi. In Parashas Mishpat, and Parashas Kisisa, the Tzira. So it was a hornet. This is Hatsira, Hoysa Misama Inehem Milamala, Umisoraston Milamata. Hashem says that Hashem sent a type of snake, whatever this was, which would throw.
A wasp,
okay. A wasp. Milamala means the eyes, Milamata means the Makam, the Erva. And this creature was a weapon. Talk about biological weapons. They had even more advanced weapons in ancient times. Okay, they took animals which had a certain type of poison. The animals would go in front of them. They would launch wasps in front of them, and these wasps would throw poison into the eyes of the enemies, and would be misorastan milamata, prevent them from having children, sterilize them. Okay, whatever this means, it means, and that's how we learn the Piryoi Mimal, the eye is called the fruit, and the Shoyresh is called the Zera. It's very fascinating that Rashi over here is giving us a whole new metaphor that fruit, since when would you ever associate the eyes with fruit?
The apple of the eye.
Interesting. So what does that mean exactly? The apple of the eye?
It's
round. It means obviously something more, because here you have a Rashi that says the eyes are fruit, period. Yeah, I'm going to say it. Yeah, this is Gemara. So this the period is the apple. So what does that mean exactly? I don't know. The apple, some want to say that's a loose translation of the tapuach. Tapuach is a very mystical concept. Some say that was the Eitz Hadas, the tapuach. Whatever it is, I don't know more than this. Let's see if we have the Radak. Radak, Pasik test in the Radak. V'nochi yishmadeti esoy mori. Hashem says, I will destroy them because of their evil laws. Hashem is complaining. The Emoriim had a set of laws that were corrupt, that denied Hashem's existence. And Klal Yisrael has the Torah. Hashem is complaining, you have exchanged the Torah for the laws of the Emoriim. The Atim Azazim is called Chusai HaTovim, Mulekach Mekhus HaMori. They did not have the Torah to reject.
They had the basic laws.
Basic, whatever their laws, we don't even know what they were. Obviously their laws were not very good. But Hashem destroyed them because of their laws. Obviously their laws were corrupt. Sodom Vamora. Okay, they were corrupt. And we, who have been given the Torah, the divine law, have abandoned the divine law for the laws of the Emoriim.
Not just the laws. There are things that we're not supposed to do because they are darkei ha'emori.
the ways of the Amori.
The okay. The occult.
Okay.
That sort of
it's saying in the chukos. B'nei chukos som horoim v'sho yulchem yishmarti yosem b'neichem v'yatem azavtem esudosai hatovim v'lkachtem chukos Amori. Ugvar hisarati eschem atoira v'loi soki oritz eschem b'tamachem oiso. Kasher ko'o es hagoy asher lifneichem. Do not let it happen to you what happened to the Amorim. The earth spit them out. The earth does not tolerate sinners. It's a very interesting idea. You don't. It's not a matter of trying to do something. It's a matter of will the thing that you're trying to do. It's that thing itself has a life of its own and will not allow its will not tolerate will not allow abuse. I'll give you an example. I was having a discussion with someone. And he said to me that he wants to learn. Tell me what you think of this. Okay, this discussion. And I think it really brings out the point of what it means over here, the earth will spit you out. I said that he wants to learn every morning. And he has money, he has plenty of money. He said he wants a charusa, but he's up very late. He's a very, very busy person. He works, he travels a lot, he does a lot of work, very intense work, and he has a family. And he's very busy, and there are times when he goes to sleep 3 o'clock in the morning, and he wakes up. He says he can't wake up later than 8, 9 o'clock. You know, he has to be, you know, he has to get on with his day, but he wants to learn every single day at least 45 minutes. So he wants to hire a chavrusa, a Talmud Chacham. Okay, you look to be hired. Okay, listen to the story. To hire a Talmud Chacham.
Very nice.
Very nice. And he wants him to, this is what he wants to do. He asked me to help him get someone. He should be on standby. He's going to daven every day. He davens every day, either from 8 to 9. Or maybe whatever it is. So he wants to pay someone to be on standby, to be ready from 8:30 to 11 o'clock. Every single day, this guy should be there, 8:30 to 11 o'clock. He should be sitting there at the table, waiting to learn. And he will come whenever he wants for 45 minutes, and he'll learn with him. And he'll learn b'chavrusa. And he'll pay him more than the going rate to be there from 11:30, from 8:30 to 11, something like that. So I said to him, and it's a real true story, okay? I'm very close with this person. I said to him, you can't do this. With the guy, the one who's looking to hire, the person who's looking to hire this fellow from 8:30 to 11 o'clock. So I said to him, there is no way in the world you will be successful in this approach, in learning. Because this is an abuse. This is an abuse to the Torah, and it's an abuse to the person that you're trying to hire. You're hiring him to be a chavrus to learn with you. So you want him just to sit around. Oh, he'll learn by himself, right? I said, you'll get people that will line up around the block. And they'll line up around the block for enough money, you can buy anything for enough money. You can buy a soine, you always say, a soine betza. A soine betza is available for the right price. Okay, you'll get someone, and the person will be convinced that the time that he's waiting for you, he's learning, he's preparing, he's learning Lashma. I said, but this attitude is really a disgrace. That's what I said to him. It's a disgraceful attitude. You want to learn with a chavrusa, the goal is to learn. You learn for 45 minutes, you set up a time. If you went to sleep last night at 3 o'clock, it's your problem. I said, everyone has these issues. Everyone has to go to sleep sometimes 3 o'clock in the morning, but they have to get up for davening at 7 o'clock. That's your problem. If you go to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, too bad for you. You want to learn, you have a set time to learn from 8:30 to 9:30. Vizehu, it's an abuse to this person to treat him like a shmata. You just stick around and wait for me when I'll show up during this period of time, and I'll pay you, of course, for all. And the money will automatically compensate for my lack of derech eretz for you, and my lack of derech eretz for the Torah Hakadosha. So I said to him, I told him, you will be able to find 1,000 people that will line up around the block willing to take this deal. But I told him, from what I understand, the Torah will not allow itself to be abused. and you will not be successful. The learning that you will do during this time will not inspire you, will not make a dent in your life. That's not the attitude you use when you go in to learn. When you go in to learn, I'm going to have a Seder. This is the time that I have a Seder. The Seder is sacred. If you can't do it, so do it twice a week, three times a week. And I said, it's not a matter of outsmarting the system. The Torah is holy. The Torah is holy. The Torah will not allow itself to be abused.
So
he said to me, I'm right. He said, you're right. The attitude, what?
You can give him my number.
your number. I'm online. I'm first. What are you talking about? I came first. You have go to the back of the line.
That's the story of the Rebbe. Someone said, I learned this in this Masechta.
Yeah.
So he said, you learned the Masechta, but what did it teach you?
What did it teach you? The Torah has a life of its own. The Torah is not going to tolerate abuse. Here you have the land, the Amorim. The Amorim, listen, we're not Jews. We're not in the Kabbalah of the Torah. We'll do whatever we want. Don't your business. We'll do whatever we want. I'm sorry. You can do whatever you want. But you have to understand, the earth, forget about Hashem, forget about the Ribbono Shel Olam, the earth is not going to tolerate abuse. This earth is a product of the Ribbono Shel Olam's creation. The earth, to a degree, is holy. Forget about Eretz Yisrael. Go to Africa. Go to the North Pole. The world is a product of Hashem's creation. The earth has sensitivities. You don't care. You want to do whatever you want. Gesundheit, do whatever you want. But remember, the earth is going to spit you out. The earth is not going to tolerate this type of behavior. You don't live in this. Nothing that you do in this world where you can say, "I'm the Bala boss. I'll take care of myself." Everything that you do affects another person or affects another element of creation, and every element of creation has its own das. We say in the nusach on Shabbos about the shemesh yoda mivoho, the sun knows its path, and the moon and the stars, all these different expressions. And these piyutim, we ascribe human characteristics to the heavenly bodies. And that's absolutely true. They also have a life. They also have a mind, so to speak, a das, to make decisions. And they do not tolerate abuse. You can't abuse the world. So this idea is what it's rather, Adak is quoting, I wiped out the Emorim. He quotes, he says even more. This is what it means in Vayikra. V'loisaki ha'aretz eschem. The earth will spit you out. Why? B'tamachem oisah. What?
Lest
the earth spit you out due to your contamination. B'tamachem oisah. Kasher ko'oes agoy asher lifneichem. Just like the earth spit out the nations that came before you. The Zohar HaEmori, why do we mention Emori? There in Paharin Vayikra, ki hu hechazok sheva sheva, who most, it was the strongest. K'mo yishama asher, ki goy va'arozim govoy, v'yaf al pichem, hishmanati yosem b'vneichem, v'loy b'char b'chem, v'loy b'kash b'chem, not with a sword, not with a bow and arrow, ela ani hishmaditiv mishorshoy, from its root. Okay, he's not quoting over here what it said in Rashi, the tzira, but a sword and a bow, you do not cut them out from the roots. Over here, it seems to be saying that the uprooting of the Amorim is going to be much greater.
To displace
entirely. The chasoin. The word chasoin means takif. We dwelt upon this on Friday. Their strength, k'mavohaya. Their strength will be like flax. And that means they'll just a spark will come and it will ignite and disappear. Okay, what's balutin? He told me three translations from Rav, from the old French.
Well, from the look of this, this looks like chestnut.
Chestnut, okay.
Yeah,
chestnut. Okay, chestnut. The Anochi Aleisi, the Koyim Shavi Yaschem El Oretz, I say Yaschem Eretz Mitzrayim, the Beis Avodim, the Oilech Yaschem Bamibar Abom Shonu Loi Chasayt and Dovri Yor Behir Galti Yaschem Dechukosai, I have accustomed you to my laws, Shloi Tulmu Dechukos Eretz HaMori, Kishatovo Loresh Oysom, Oysom Oytam Loreshes, Dovek Im Haleisi, and Yaschem Eretz Mitzrayim, or the word Loreshes. Okay, I'm not sure what he means over here. Loreshes goes back. He's saying over here the word Loreshes. Loreshes is, can mean one of two things. Loreshes means to possess, or Loreshes means to obliterate. Is that what it means? Is that what it means over here? So in the second parish, it says Loreshes means going back on Ha'aleisim Eretz Mitzrayim. I took you out of Egypt, Loreshes. Okay, I'm not sure what he means. Let's leave that out. I'm not sure what he means. Let's go take a look at the Malbim. The Malbim Pasuk test. Yeah.
But interesting, he speaks of the Morim having chukim, which is a...
Every government, every civilization has laws.
But certain ones are hefkevelt, but they have chukim.
No, there's no such thing as a hefkevelt. Every civilized nation in the world had a set of laws. You can't, you know what, people just are nomads?
There are laws. There's
a code of conduct. You cannot exist in this world without a code of conduct. There are certain basic things. Okay, pasuk. Let's see the Malbim. The Malbim pasuk says, "V'anochi hine Hashem b'tuvai heichin ha'chonos shelo yitamu b'shikutzim eile." Hashem in His goodness appeared all of these preparations that we should not become contaminated in their evil ways. Shehem avodah zarah v'gilurais, avodah zarah v'gilurais. V'hoya bozeh shtei ha'chonos. The Malbim is teaching us that Hashem is preparing Klal Yisrael for two things. Number one, Aleph shehishmir so'emor b'mehem. Okay, number one is very important. Yisoy Mitzrayim is called the Ervas Haaretz, promiscuity, Arayos.
That's part of it.
The what?
Kishu,
okay, that's another thing. But it's called the Ervas Haaretz. In America, it's known that Las Vegas is the lowest of the low in this matter. What? Sin City. Okay, it's known to be, this is the Mokum that is Mamish, the Toevois of Arayos are, what?
San Francisco is worse.
It's even worse? It's a new thing or it's an old thing? Old thing. The Lubavitcher Rebbe did not allow a shaliach to be sent to Las Vegas in his lifetime. Now they are. In his lifetime. In his lifetime, the Rebbe did not allow. Because the level of tumah was so great, the reports that came back to him is that it was sakana to send any one of his people there; they would be swallowed up by the contamination. So there are mekoymos in this world which are known to have very intense levels of contaminations relating specifically in the area of arayos. Here, this Malbim is telling us a very important yesoid. Egypt was known, especially where was the worst place? The worst place. This is another Chazal. Goshen. Goshen was the worst. When Klal Yisrael, Paro, what did Paro say? It gives you a whole new spin on what Paro said. Paro said, "You know what? When he met with Yaakov, and Yosef says, 'My family is coming down. So let me see some of your brothers.' Then Yosef presented five of the brothers. He saw." Nice Erlucha Yiddish mention with he says these people have to assimilate. into each into society. If I go and I put them somewhere in an isolated ghetto, they're not going to assimilate. So you know what? Go to Goshen. It's a medrash. What do you mean?
That's not the conventional.
It's not popular.
Okay,
the popular medrash is Goshen was the property of Sori Menu.
Get them out of town.
The popular medrash is that when last week's parashas Lech Lecha, when Paro abducted Sarah, and then Hashem said you're going to die for what you've done, and then he approached Avram, why? What did you do to me? Why did you not tell me this is your wife? And then he released her and he gave matanos. One of the gifts that he gave two gifts. He gave number one a shifra, Hagar. You can have her, she's all yours. You could have Hagar, a gift, a very talented woman.
His daughter?
Okay. It was a shifra. Wow, yeah. She's a very talented woman. She'll do you a lot of good. And number two, I'll give you some real estate. I'll give you Goshen. That's what it says in the Medrash. Hagar did not turn out to be such a blessing for Klal Yisrael. She produced Yishmael, Ruhuyeh Pera Adam Yodai Bakol Yad Kol Boy. What else did he do? What other blessing? He gave Goshen. Now, it doesn't say much. We don't know much about Goshen, but there are scattered midrashim that tell us that Goshen was equivalent to the Las Vegas of America.
I'd like to know where
I'll show you how I saw it inside. Therefore, just like, you know, if you want to go give someone some property, and you know, okay, you can go to China, you can have Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is all yours. It's all yours, Washington, D.C. Not bad, right? You go and you give someone Goshen, you give someone Las Vegas, that's not very good. If they're going to come and settle in Las Vegas, it's going to affect them. They're going to be contaminated. Paro, so the popular medrash, when Paro saw Yaakov and his children and said, you're coming down to Egypt to survive, you know what, so go to you, you have assets. My people tell me that you own property here in Egypt. It was given to you by my great-grandfather. He gave your great-grandmother the city of Goshen. You have the deed still, so go settle, live in Goshen. But it's much deeper than that. Why did his great-grandfather give them Goshen? Because Goshen was not in a very good neighborhood. It was a neighborhood which would cause Klal Yisrael to be nichshol. They knew that the God of these Jews, he hates Arayos. And if you want to prevent them from flexing their muscle and being successful and overtaking the country, cause them to be nichshol in Arayos, just like Bilam and Balak. Bilam said to Balak, I was unsuccessful in cursing the Jewish people, but let me give you some advice. If you want to be successful in overcoming them, he told Midian, send out your young ladies, your young girls, and have them entice the Jewish young boys. They'll be nichshol in Arayos. Hashem, he hates Arayos. Hashem will remove his hashkacha, and then you'll be able to overcome them. This is nothing new. This was the technique of Paro. Paro, Melech Mitzrayim, did exactly the same thing. Goshen is yours. Live there. After a couple of weeks living in Goshen, let's see what becomes of you. It's impossible for you to walk the streets in Goshen. You'll be nichshol in Arayos. And you'll be nichshol in Arayos, Hashem will withdraw his hashkacha. And then you'll assimilate. So here it says, in Eretz Yisrael, which nation Eretz Yisrael excelled, was known to be from the Zion Amamin, was known to be the worst in Arayos, Emori. The Emoriim, they were the ones that had the reputation of the Toevites. And that's why it says in the Chumash, we learn this by Mincha Yom HaKippurim, Hashem says, this is how the Malam is learning over here, the reason why Hashem over here, we're coming now into Eretz, Hashem is reviewing history. I brought you into Eretz Yisrael, and I protected you from Arayos and from Avodah Zarah. How did I protect you from being nichshol in Arayos? I wiped out the Emoriim. The Emoriim were the ones who promoted Arayos. They were the Ervas Ha'aretz and Eretz Yisrael. Back to the Malbim on page 283 on the bottom, the Chein Ho Emoriim. Okay, it's a couple of lines down. Uveyichol Mekayma Shekevashum Yisrael Hayu Mekukolim Mikol HaTo'evos Ha'Ela. They were the worst. Ulechein Ho'etziyam Mitzrayim Vehishmenes Ha'Emoriim. He obliterated the Emoriim, Shelo Yilmdu Yisrael Mimaseim, Chumosham Vitaras Behanim, Shizmla Ador HaChayev, Sheyavol Yisrael, Viparu Mehem. Hashem took this generation of the Emorim who were guilty of being Nichshol and Arayos, and he brought the Jewish people upon them to destroy them. The in Kain Ech Tetovu Atem Bitoivos Eila Asher Bimeze Shmati Yasamari. Therefore, the Malbim says it's a beautiful parish. I went out of my way. I bent backwards for you to obliterate specifically this nation more than the other nations, in order that you should not be Nichshol in Arayos. So, how can it be now, all of these years later, 480 years later? That's when it was destroyed, the Beis HaMikdash. But how can it be, it was 850 years later. How could it be now, 850 years later, you're guilty of Gilui Arayos? You're guilty of the same Toevos that the Emorim were guilty of. Did I not go and attempt that this should not happen? I went out of my way to destroy the Emorim and their way of life so you should not be influenced after them and be Nichshol and Nitzei Maveiros. I wiped them out. Why was there an Esoyon for you to do this? And yet, look how bad you are. You went and you dug up the records. You went and you found the ways the Emorim lived, conduct themselves, and you emulated them to anger me, and therefore you now need to be punished. V'loi toimar shemarim nishmad baderech ativi v'al yidei kibu shohoy yisrol chazokim mehem loichem ki yichoya ki goyva rozim govoy b'molucha v'shol tonus. They were mighty, they were tall like cedars, they were powerful like these chestnut trees. The Gam, another interpretation, according Rashi, the Goiva refers to their angel in Shamayim. The Gibor Chayil, their might was extremely powerful, and they had an army. The Hashmoda Atzma Hoisa Gamkin Lamal Derech Hateva. Everything that happened was Lamala Miderech Hateva. It was a supernatural miracle for you to succeed in obliterating this nation, and that's only because I wanted to do you the favor to take away the Nisoyoin of being Nichshol in Arayos. How then can you be so foolish to go and follow in these ways? Okay, so that is the first part. Now the next part, Pasuk Yud, V'anochi, V'gam L'tach L'zeh Alesi Eschem Eretz Nisrayim V'olich Eschem B'Amibar Arboim Shonim B'bnei Shoyim B'liba Machshavas Pigul Asher Lomdu Min HaMitzriyim. Now he's telling us something very, very fascinating. Why were we in the desert for 40 years? It's an amazing thing what he says. When we were in Egypt, what did we witness? We saw all the Arayos. We were influenced by all of the abominations that were done in Egypt. Those thoughts, those things that we saw lingered in our minds. It took 40 years for us to let it dissipate, to forget. What? Cleansing process. Correct. It's an amazing thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us a blessing called Shikha, to forget. Part built in to a human being is that if a person does not review, he forgets. So why is that? Isn't that a defect? A defect in the human being that a person forgets? The answer is no, it's the ultimate blessing. If a person would not forget, you couldn't live. You would never forgive your friend. If your friend angers you, so just like you don't want to forgive him when he does the terrible sin, you're not going to forgive him 10, 20, 30 years from now. But since time, Mashiyaseh Hazman, Lo Yaseh Haseichel, time heals all wounds. Time allows a person to forget all of the disgusting abominations that we witnessed and saw in Egypt needed to be forgotten from us before we can enter the Holy Land. Therefore, we had to wander in the desert for 40 years. So Hashem over here is telling us this pasuk according to the Malbim is just awesome. He's telling us, what does it mean over here in this pasuk Tesen Yud that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for us two favors? The favor is I brought you in the desert for 40 years. That's not a favor. That's a curse. Is that not a curse? To wander in the desert for 40 years. The only reason why we wandered was because of the 10 sins. Vayinasu oisi ze eser pa'amim. You tested me. You tested me starting with the egel, or really before that with the mayim. There was no water to drink. Ultimately, they came to do the egel, and then the last aver, which was unforgivable, was to say about Eretz Yisrael, we don't want it. We don't want it. It's not for us. The land is not a good land. They believe the false reports of the spies, the meraglim. And Hashem said, because of this chutzpah of rejecting the land, you're going to wander in the land 40 days, 40 years, corresponding to the 40 days that the meraglim spied the land. Isn't that the pshuto shel mikra? Yes. Yet this pasuk, the Malam is telling us, is that life is very complicated. That in every punishment, there's a silver lining. There's a blessing. And what was the silver lining? By wandering in the desert for 40 years, you were able to cleanse your mind from the filth of what you've witnessed in Egypt for 210 years. It allows the mind, it forgets, it dissipates, it disappears.
The new generation, the people that went in, did you witness what happened?
He's not even saying that.
Yeah, I know.
He's saying he's reality. Right, it's reality. It's not for everyone, because anyone under 20 years old.
To process.
No, someone under 20 years old, a teenager, a 13-year-old boy.
They don't have
no, it's not so. Today the psychologists are very into this. They're very into this. Is that how did your parents treat you? Anyone who has a problem with their mom is very popular. Dentists, right? I hear this all the time. You go to a psychologist and you're 60 years old. And they want to know, well, how did your father treat you when you were 10 years old? The reason why you... What?
I do it differently.
Do it differently. Baruch Hashem.
Get over it. What are you going to do?
Get over it. Get over it. But some people...
I understand. What are you going
to
do?
You're old enough to know better.
But is there truth to it? Is that why you're beating your wife? Because when I was 10 years old, my father didn't say good morning to me. He didn't smile enough at me.
He saw the mother...
I could use that excuse.
Is there truth to it? Maybe a little bit. You're right, it's not an excuse. Get over it. Just man up. Forget about it. Get on with it. But are there cause and effect in how a person's mind, his trajectory in life, his psychological health, depends upon the way he was treated as a child? Who knows? No one really knows. Everyone is different, obviously. You can't generalize.
I mean, you acknowledge it, you process it, but then...
Whatever it is, get over it. Get over it.
But
over here, you have a fascinating Malam. There's so much psychology in the Malam. The Malam over here is telling us over here that you were there in Egypt for 40 years. For what purpose? To dissipate. Time heals all wounds. This was by design. It was a toiva. And what was the other taiva? That when you come into Eretz Yisrael, al pi derech hateva, you should not have been able to wipe out the Amorim. And look, Klal Yisrael did not wipe out all the nations. There were nations that did not wipe. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow Klal Yisrael to wipe out lemala miderech hateva all of the nations in Eretz Yisrael? The entire Sefer Yoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, and Melachim, is they're fighting with other nations living in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't conquer. The Chalokim, they didn't conquer. Even the Yerushalayim was owned by the Yavusi. They never gave it up. The Yavusi was a stronghold in Eretz Yisrael all the way until they built the Beis HaMikdash. So what's going on? Why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu allow Klal Yisrael to supernaturally wipe out all of the enemies in Eretz Yisrael? Why do we have to wait for such a... Why only Emorim? Did the Kodesh Baruch Hu miraculously allow us to succeed in conquering? The answer is because they pose the greatest danger. Which danger? Not a physical danger, a spiritual danger. The danger of immorality. The danger of the to'evos, whatever these are, right, these things that they've done. So this is how the Malam was over here, learning over here, one more time, the Pasuk Yod. It's awesome how these two things come together. There were thoughts of no good thoughts. What's a good word for piggle? Piggle, not in halacha, and kachah means abomination, right? And the kachim means a whole different thing. Chutz l'zman, chutz l'mekoymoy, b'machshev es pigul, unholy thoughts, asher lamdu min ha-mitzriyim, v'lo ha-yochel la-havim b'tekef, lo resha, says Eretz Yemari, sh'hoyim misyari min kipen yeshuvu la-astoyz, k'toyevois ha-mitzriyim k'mo sh'chosov, like it says, ki atem yudatim eis asher yishav yeretz mitzriyim, v'atiru es shikutzehem, l'chein ha-ni-om, I cause them to wander. 40 years, our boy Mishra Bamidbar, Ad Shemesu Hador HaKoydim Bamidbar, V'ador Chodesh Ro Maaseh Hashem V'Hashko Chosoy, V'Nitshuv, like you said, remember you said also, the old door died out. He actually says that. They died out. And therefore, V'Nitshuvu, they were purified. V'Nizkiku, Bamidbar. Two different words, which means they were purified in the desert, Moshe Kosav, the Aretzos HaShalom Dush, Beis, Allah paused to say that he wrote, V'Yimkein Haloch Yachinoisi Hachonis Leval Yitamu Ba'avodah Zora V'Yilarayis V'Toyevas Mitzrayim Mechonan. Okay, so we have a beautiful parish here in the Malbim, Pasuk Tes, Pasuk Yud, the two Toivois Hashem did for Klal Yisrael to supernaturally Al Derech Neis wipe out the Emorim more than other nations. Number two, to cause us to wander 40 days, to cleanse us, to prepare us to come into Eretz Yisrael. It's a shocking chiddush. Many times in life, you don't understand. People think they're being punished. They're being punished. And then only later, in hindsight, they realize is that even though it's true, they did suffer during a tekufa in their life. But during that tekufa, when they suffered, Hashem was laying the foundation for an awesome bracha that they never in their wildest imaginations can think would be possible. And they're both true. It was a punishment. You've done an Avera, and therefore you have to be punished, and you suffered real, real suffering. And number two, look at that. During this period of time, it was the foundation for what would come next. See, people are very naive.
Of course, people were sent to Siberia. Yeah, those were the ones who were saved.
Who were saved.
I mean, not all. I mean, but see, a lot of people thought Siberia
but
also.
But don't fall into the trap. People fall into the trap and they think what's happening to you now is only a blessing. It's only, right, even a person is suffering, and it's a blessing in disguise. And later they taka realize that during that it was a blessing. But what my issue is, it's not a blessing. You suffer. If you suffer, it's suffering. Don't make light of the fact that there is suffering in this world. It just also, Hashem is so complex. The world is so complex that at the same time that you suffer and you feel real pain, and there is what to reflect upon, there is also blessing at the very, very same time. Many people are naive and they say, there's no suffering. Because this is the foundation, okay, this is the foundation for what will come next, the foundation of blessing. So this is really blessing. Excuse me, this is not a blessing. This is painful. If it's painful, it's painful. It can be both. There can be pain, and that pain is deserved. And that pain is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message to a person. But at the same time, there is also a blessing there in disguise that can come later on.
What happened to Yosef? The whole story of Yosef.
It was painful, right. The whole good old Klal Yisrael
was
saved.
Painful.
Deny the fact that there was pain. There was pain. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, the same blessing can come without the pain. To say, oh, that this is the only way it can come about. The only way it can come about that you can have the blessing is through the pain. No pain, no gain. That's not true. You know why that's not true? Because you're limiting Hashem. Anytime you hold Hashem hostage, you are doing something that is kineged our hashkafa. Hashem is unlimited. If Hashem wants to bring you that blessing without the pain, it can come. It happens that sometimes, for reasons that we do not know, Hashem brings blessing only through pain. But don't say, like some want to suggest, it has to be like that. There's no pain, no gain. That's not true. Because Hashem is unlimited. Hashem is HaKol Yochol. Why is it like that? We don't know it's like that. Many times, more often than not, bracha only comes through pain.
But what happens with Ganei, right? The problem is pain will perform without pain. After that, the greatest bracha is the childbirth. That can happen without.
Exactly. So why is that so? Because of a chait. Right. So on a microscopic level, every single person in their lives, they always wonder, look, I experienced a very painful time in my life. And out of that, in hindsight, I discover I had incredible blessing. So now you ask yourself the question, would it have been possible for the Ribbono Shel Olam to bring me that blessing without that pain? Would it have been possible? Would there be an appreciation emotionally of what I've received? Would I have reached this level? Would it have happened in Hashkocha Pratis? And you wonder. And more often than that, you say to yourself, no. You reach the conclusion that it's part of the way Hashem made the world. The only way you can achieve blessing is only if there is pain. Is that correct?
Is that correct?
The only way you can achieve blessing is through pain?
Not
it's not correct. Why not? For one very simple reason. Because you're limiting Hashem. You're saying to Hashem, you're limited. There's only that much you can do. If you want to give a human being a bracha, the only way you can give him that bracha is by first torturing him. He won't be able to appreciate the blessing. He won't be able to even physically achieve the blessing unless he goes through a painful process. Because that's the way you are, Hashem. That's the way you made the world. That's not correct. I don't think it's correct. Because that means, Hashem, you know, you're limited. There are things that you cannot do. Anytime you say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you're limited, you're touching upon a place you don't want to go. Who taught me this? Rabbi Reisman taught me this. He taught me this, and this idea is to say, Hashem only gives you a nesoyon that you can handle. It's within your koichos hanefesh to succeed, to overcome the difficulty. So the Reisman says, doesn't make sense from a Torah Hashkafa. Because by saying that, you're saying to Hashem, you're limited. The only thing, there are certain things that you can do, there are certain things you can't do. Hashem is not limited. Hashem can do anything he wants. When you begin to limit Hashem, is where you begin to abandon Emunah. And that's a very dangerous path to go. So here, Rashi is telling us, is ignoring 100 Mamori Chazal that tell us, and Pesukim that tell us, you know why you were in the desert for 40 years? You know why you were there? Because you were punished. Punished. Vayancha vayarivecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He afflicted you in the desert 40 years by giving you the man. It was torture to travel the Saudi Arabian desert for 40 years. Torture. Punishment. Why? Because and here the Malbim says, I did you the biggest taiva. I didn't let you come into Eretz Yisrael because the land would spit you out so fast. When you would come into the land is a holy land. And if you come into the land, you have these machshavas in your mind, these thoughts. You remember the reruns from the television shows that you were watching when you were there living in Egypt. If you would start just daydreaming and share the reruns of, all these things in your mind, the land, the holy land, would spit you out. So I delayed your entry 40 years so these thoughts should dissipate. The blessing of Shikha. It was a blessing. What do you mean it's a blessing? It was a curse. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Okay, the next, before we go to the Chumash Hanukkah, another very important insert from the Maamar here tells us about the concept of forgetting. It's a blessing to forget. As far as I know, we know that man, Hashem, created man, B'tselem Elokim, in the image of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Pasuk, many Pesukim have mentioned this. There are two kashos on this concept. Number one, Hashem never sleeps. Hinei lo yonum v'lo yishon shomer Yisrael. A human being never, a human being cannot exist without sleeping. Number two, v'zoicher kol ha-nishkoches, ein shikha lifnei chisei chevoidecha. So look at this. These are two things that separate the man from the boys. The men from the boys. Separate the Ribbono shel Olam from human beings. Hashem does not forget, and Hashem does not sleep. Haloi davar. It's unbelievable. Man, human being forgets, human being sleeps. And the truth is, they're totally zeh bezeh. Let me explain. This is a very important insight. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create a human being that he goes to sleep? Why is that so? Why is it so? A man, why do we need to sleep? If Hashem doesn't sleep, think of how productive we would be if we did not get tired. The world, it would be a whole different world. If man did not tire, you can go on like the Energizer Bunny, day in, day out, day, night, 24/7, Shabbos, we won't do work. Why is it necessary that man go to sleep? So there's a very interesting Rashi in the beginning of the Torah that tells us the secret as why it has to be man needs to go to sleep, and it fits perfectly with the only other defect man has that does not exist by Hashem, the idea of forgetting. Rashi says when Hashem made Chava, Hashem put Adam to sleep. Why? Why was that necessary? Today, you know, it's the biggest kunst today in the medical field. If you can keep the patient up during the surgery, it's the biggest thing. If you only need to give a localized anesthesia, or even if you need to give him a certain type of anesthesia where you just give him a small dosage where he's still semi-conscious and he's awake. And that way it's good for the doctor because the patient's alive. You know, too much anesthesia is not healthy. And also the patient knows what's going on. You can tell the doctor, you know, I think, you know, move the needle a little bit to the left. Move it to the right. You know, you can help out the doctor. It's a kunst. It's a kunst to stay awake when you do a medical procedure. It really is. Everyone today, that's the whole industry, the medical industry. It's a big kunst. Yet Hashem didn't go for the kunst. When Hashem did the medical procedure, he did surgery. Hashem was a rib. He specialized in the lungs, in the ribs, not the lungs, the ribs. He specialized in the ribs. Such a doctor said, they don't do surgery, they just let the heal the ribs, right? He did reconstructive surgery, cosmetic surgery. He put Adam to sleep. He took out a rib, and from that rib, he fashioned Chava. And Hashem put, why did Hashem put Adam to sleep? Rashi says, so Adam should not see that this creature came from his rib. It would have been disgusting to him. It would have been maus. I don't know why, but that's what it is. It would have been disgusting for a person to see a bone extracted from his own body, fashioned into another human being, and that human being now is going to become his equal, is going to become his spouse. Maybe it's because she'll lord over him. How dare you tell me what to do? You know where you come from? You come from me. You come from my bone. You're one of my bones. And now I have to support you. I have to feed you. I have to be good to you. Who do you think you are? You're just one of my bones. And all of a sudden, feminism, women's lift, women, they run the world. What is going on over here? It's disgusting. It's disgusting in the eyes of Adam HaRishon. So Hashem says, better you don't know, better you don't see. Better you don't see this, so you should. In other words, you know why you don't see? You know why you go to sleep? It's an incredible chiddush. You know why you go to sleep? Not everything in this world do you have to know. Think about it. There are people who love the news. They're obsessed with them. They sit the whole day, every second. What happened? Russ is nice. What happened? Russ is nice. What happened? Every second. You know something? You don't need to know everything. It really doesn't make a difference for you. It's Nogehim. Not everything in this world is your business. Mind your own business. You don't need to know. Hashem created sleep in this world to teach a human being. When you go to sleep, things are happening in this world that you don't know about. You have no clue. Because you're not awake. You can't sit in front of the screen and see what's going on because you're sleeping. Hashem put Adam to sleep because I don't want you to know what's going on. Every single day a person goes to sleep for 5, 6, 7 hours, so you shouldn't know what's going on. And to remind you, not everything in this world is your business. What is shikha? Even what you do know, better you forget about. These two defects that a human being has relative to the Ribbono Shel Olam, man was created b'tzelem Elokim. Hashem has eyes, we have eyes. Hashem has ears, we have kaviyachol. But there are two things that we have no connection. Hashem doesn't sleep. Hinei lo yonum v'lo yishon shomer Yisrael. Hashem does not forget. Ki ein shichol lifnei chisei chivodecha. And Adam sleeps, and Adam forgets. Why? It's totally zeh b'zeh. Because Hashem says to a human being, not everything in this world do you have to know. There are certain things you shouldn't know to begin with. Go to sleep. There are things that are going to happen that you're not going to be aware of when you're sleeping. Number two, even when you wake up and you do experience things in life, you know something, it's not for your good. Forget about it. Shikha, I want you not to remember, not to know. These two things, these two defects are totally zeh b'zeh. Here, he's telling us, exactly Hashem is using this to our benefit. Here, we're going into Mitzrayim, he's saying, Hashem, 40 years for us to forget. To forget what we saw in Egypt, all of the mode of behavior, their lifestyle, so that when we come to Eretz Yisrael, the earth should be tolerant of us and not spit us out. Okay, we'll stop here.